Okay, just one listener wondering if we could repeat the areas who will be without water today. So Kildare County Council announcing that an ESB outage will occur at a pump house at Kill Hill today. Water supply to Bishop's Court, Delahunts Lane, Porterstown, Old Mill, Owenstown and the Castle Warden area may suffer low pressure or a loss of supply until 5 o'clock this evening, while repairs to a leak will be carried out today in Staplestown, and water supply to Staplestown, Gilltown Lane and the surrounding area will be affected until 4:30. Now moving on, universities will be required to tackle high dropout rates and boost outcomes for vulnerable students under a 4-year government access plan for higher education, which is due to be unveiled shortly. The National Access Plan 2022 to 2026 will aim to increase the number of students progressing to college from groups such as travellers, single parents, people with disabilities, care leavers, students from disadvantaged areas and mature students. Well, Access Programme Manager with the Irish Universities Association, Colm Downes, joins us now. Colm, good morning.
Good morning, Owen. How are you?
I'm not too bad. The reason of this National Access Plan being delivered and developed is in response to data showing that students from poorer backgrounds and those with disabilities are at a higher risk of dropping out compared with others. I'm sure that's something that you would have seen in universities around the country.
Well, that's correct, yes. And that's been a trend that's been in place for a number of years. However, universities have taken great measures and great steps to increase the number of students entering into higher education, and we'd fully support this report, this new National Access Plan, in terms of how it's going to look at retention of students and the experience. That it's not to look at access to higher education not just as a means of admission, but a means of the full gamut of student experience. And in fact, the Irish University Association were, and its universities and members were advocating for that position. So we're fully in support, and we really welcome this plan.
Okay, the aim of the plan, which is not yet published, it is due to be published by the end of this month by Minister for Further and Higher Education, Simon Harris, is to make education more inclusive and representative of the wider population. Because when you look at those maybe who are in disadvantaged areas compared to, you know, more well-off areas, the percentage of those who go on to third level would be quite a lot lower. And I know that the plan won't just measure access, such as did someone get into college, but also what their experience is like when they go to college.
That's correct. Now, we developed the Irish University Association, and our members have developed the DARE and the HEAR schemes, which are the two largest access programmes in the country, and they also include all the public HEIs in the country now. And we took up the reins to deliver that as a means of increasing the number of students from those very backgrounds you have mentioned, in terms of students with disabilities and in terms of the students from the most disadvantaged communities in Ireland. And we've made some gains in those areas, but there's still some significant gains to be made. When one of the report in the Irish Times yesterday referenced the most disadvantaged communities in Ireland, and yes, that's absolutely correct. There is a low number of those students in extremely disadvantaged areas making their way towards higher education. But at the moment, we're not fully aware, and we haven't seen any data from the Department of Education to tell us, well, how many students in those extremely disadvantaged communities are actually sitting the Leaving Cert. So how many are even getting to the point where they can get the points or acquire the points in order to enter into the system? So whereas the universities are ready and willing, and we very much are ready and willing to support any student that enters through the doors, irrespective of their background, we can't do this alone. And we need, you know, the constituent parts of the system need to be working and pulling together in order to support these students right through into higher education, and then in the doors to support them, and then hopefully into the world of employment or postgraduate options.
Yeah, and that's an important point that you mentioned, and I touched on it there as well, that it's not just about getting those students from disadvantaged areas to college. It is about kind of progressing them and checking in with them, I guess, when they do get in, because the plan now is requiring universities to tackle high dropout rates. So we might have people from, you know, traveller communities or that are disabled going into university, but plans have to be put in place to keep them there and to make their experience as positive as possible.
That's correct. A number of our universities already will have plans and, in fact, strategies, published strategies in place. I'd point to the UCD's Access and Lifelong Learning strategy, where it's grounded in the UCD strategy of rising to the future, of looking to the needs of the students. And I could point to a number of examples around the country in terms of how they plan and have addressed the needs of those students. When you look at some like the categories of students with disability, you'd see students with physical disabilities, students with sensory disabilities, or even within the category of disability, are even more disadvantaged or more underrepresented in higher education. And we have been advocating for this position for a long time and have strategies in place. However, what I would say, Owen, is that the numbers of students entering into higher education has increased anyway in the past number of years, and it will continue to rise to 2031 and plateau in 2024. So we're going to see increased numbers coming through, but we haven't seen a reciprocal increase in the staffing levels to service the needs of these students, because a lot of students come in, they are vulnerable, they do need supports in order to ensure their success in higher education. And we'd be calling on the government to back up to back up what we want to do within higher education, within the universities, to increase the numbers of students coming through, and to ensure that they have an equitable experience, irrespective of what your background is, that it's no different to any other mainstream student coming through to college.
Okay, just before we let you go then, Colm, to finish up on this point, we're talking about those students perhaps that are sitting the Leaving Cert and coming in to the third level institutions, but what about mature students? Because I note that in the case of mature students, participation rates fell significantly behind access plan targets. Just 7% of full-time new entrants were mature students in 2019 to 2020, compared with 13% in 2012 and 2013. So this fell well below the target of 16%. Clearly something needs to be done there to encourage people, mature students, to come back to university.
I fully agree with you, Owen. There's a number, the Higher Education Authority undertook a review of that very group, and the numbers have been falling. And yes, there's a correlation between, you know, when there's employment available in the economy, mature students tend to take it up. But there's been little attention given to the opportunities that might be provided by evening time or flexible or part-time evening courses through universities, and not just in the areas of STEM, through the arts and the full gamut of student experience and what kind of courses are available. And to back those students up with things like grants and supports, because if universities are not funded adequately to keep their libraries open, to keep the canteens open, to have full services, to have the disability services available in the evening, the access services available in the evening, and to have a full equitable experience irrespective of what mode you study in. And we would strongly advocate for mature students that they should not just be looking, at mature students from the Monday to Friday, 9 to 5 student experience, that we need to be looking at this in a much more flexible base in order to encourage those students and incentivize them to access the system.
Indeed. Well, the National Access Plan 2022-2026, as I say, aims to increase the number of students progressing from college from groups such as travellers, single parents, people with disabilities, care leavers, students from disadvantaged areas and mature students. And the plan is to be published by the Minister for Further and Higher Education, Simon Harris, at the end of August. But with that rundown, Colm Downes, Access Programme Manager at the Irish Universities Association, thanks for your time this morning. Colm, and good morning to you. We're going to stay on the issue of education, but from a slightly different perspective now. And Sinn Féin TD for Kildare North, Raida Cronin, joins us. Good morning, Raida.
Good morning, Ellen. I nearly said Shane, oh my God.
You're all right, don't worry about it, I've been called worse. Come here, what's going on here with the bus situation, Raida? We've covered this on the programme in the last couple of weeks in Dunedee, in Selbridge, in Ballymore. Parents are at their wits' end in Newbridge as well, where they're not getting places for their children on the school buses. What is the story?
Yes, Owen, I've had several families on the bus worried about the bus scullion. you know, some of them had problems registering on the portal, but you know, this week many of them are getting notified that they're not going to have a school place on the bus scholar system. And you know, I was talking to Darren O'Rourke there yesterday, our spokesperson for transport. Thousands of children will again be turned away from school transport this year, and you know, we have called, Sinn Féin has called for an extra 10,000 extra places to be funded and made available to meet the demand. And you know, Owen, this is an issue for the government first and last. There's no point in announcing free school bus places when there aren't the places there in the first place, whether they're free or not. And we're asking the government to add an extra 10,000 extra places, because the public listening today, they're doing their bit in getting out of the car and to get their children to school and to get them on the bus scholar. But the government is not doing their bit by giving them the places. And it's maddening and it's galling. And every year this happens, every year the bus scholar is oversubscribed, and they know this. But this year they announced it, that there were going to be free places, and instead of putting the capacity in needed for people to you know, to be able to avail of, lots of people are finding that there's no place for their child at all.
Right, should those calls from Sinn Féin not have been done a little bit earlier then, Raida, because, you know, students are going back to school next week?
Yes, well, they were. We did look for extra places, and we were talking about this. I think the government actually they didn't do their homework on this. They announced very quickly the free bus service without doing the homework necessary and the preparatory work, because we were putting pressure on the back to school back in July, and they announced this. I think it was the 5th of July they announced this without putting the extra places in, and we were. In our plan, we had the extra places put in for schools, because we want to get you know, people out of their cars. We want to stop all those private bus journeys, private car journeys every morning. And you know, the problem is the government thinks that announcing something is delivering something, and that's not the case. They're completely out of touch.
Yeah, I made the point on the programme last week as well that, you know, I was asking the question, was there engagement between the government and Bus Éireann before this announcement was made, or was it a case of the government saying free transport for all and then Bus Éireann realising and going back to the government and saying, we don't have the capacity to deal with the level of, I suppose, interest in this. We're seeing parents now, Raida. We spoke to a parent in Selbridge, and I've mentioned it before, she has a son on the bus, her daughter can't get on the bus. We have other parents who have paid for the bus for the last 5 or 6 years for their children and are now not getting places. Parents who were told... Parents who were told that they would have a place for their child to then get an email and be told that place is no longer there. So we have a serious issue here, and parents are in dire straits now with the return of school next week.
They are, and you know, it's affecting people. If you're lucky enough to have a job, you know, it's proven to be a nightmare for parents. You know, if they were used to the local bus scholar collecting their child, now they're going to have to drive their kids to school and still get into work, or still get, you know, drop other children to childcare. It's an absolute nightmare for parents. And the problem is that the government thinks that just by announcing something, it's delivering something. And they seem to have done this without talking to the private bus operators that have the contract with Bus Éireann for the bus scholar routes. And it's an absolute disaster. Like, expanding the school bus system, it's a win-win for parents and for the environment. And the Minister for Transport and the Minister for Education should step in and immediately increase capacity now to ensure that as many children as possible can be accommodated on this.
Okay.
It's an absolute disaster. And, you know, the emails are rolling in. I was contacted on Twitter there by another lady last night, and they have to expand the scheme. You know, it cuts transport emissions, it reduces dangerous traffic congestion outside schools, and it provides parents with the convenient method of their kids getting to school.
All right. Sinn Féin TD for Kildare North, Raida Cronin, thanks for joining us. And as we have said on the show before, if there are any parents that have been impacted by this in terms of school bus places, get in touch with us and we'll see what we can do, and we can pass on your information to the relevant public representatives in the area and follow up on it. And thanks indeed you for joining us this morning, Rheda, and good morning to you. After the break, we're going to be talking about the price of fuel. Why is it going down? How low will it go? And how long is it going to stay low?
Kildare Today.
With Whitewater Shopping Centre Newbridge, Ireland's largest regional shopping centre. Fashion, food, film, all under one roof in the heart of Newbridge. WhitewaterSC.ie. Kildare
KFM. Okay, just before we go to Ciara, we heard this in our sport this morning that Kildare ladies senior football team are on the lookout for a new manager now after Sean Finnegan has stepped away from his role. He is taking up a role, I believe, with Kevin McStay as part of the backroom team with the Mayo senior men's footballers. The statement from Sean Finnegan read last night at a meeting. Tonight, Monday, I informed the Kildare LGFA County Board that I will not be continuing in my role as the manager of the Kildare ladies football team for 2023. This decision has only been taken by me this evening and was very difficult for me to make. A number of weeks ago, I was approached by my friend and army colleague of over 40 years, Kevin McStay, and he asked, would I join his management team for the Mayo County manager position? I had previously been involved with Kevin in the Roscommon team from 2016 to 2018. Tonight, he was formally appointed to this position and I have taken the decision to join him in this journey. As a passionate Mayo man, I have always wanted to become involved with my own county, and so this opportunity was one that I could not pass up. I am very sad to be leaving this team. I really enjoyed getting to know and work closely with the group. I firmly believe that they will achieve great success in the years ahead. Wonderful work has been done at club and county level for the last number of years, and the recent results at under 14, under 16 and minor shows that the future is in indeed bright. This work needs, though, to be continued and supported by the board to ensure that it develops and makes Kildare Ladies a future powerhouse of ladies footballers, ladies football. Finally, I would like to wish the Kildare players, the county board and my successor the very best of luck in the season ahead. I will be following you with close interest. And those are the words of Sean Finnegan, who stepped down as manager of the Kildare Ladies footballers yesterday evening. Ciara.
Now, this next topic will ring happily in a lot of people's ears. Why is the price of petrol going down and how low will it go? Paul Dean joins me now. He's the research fellow at the Centre for Marine and Renewable Energy and the Environmental Research Institute. That is at University College Cork. Good morning to you, Paul.
Good morning.
Thank you for taking the time. So the first question is, how low will the petrol prices go?
Yeah, and you're right. You know, there hasn't been many good news stories really around the whole energy crisis over the last couple of months. We're probably in the deepest energy crisis that we have seen in Ireland and Europe since the 1980s. So, and all of us have witnessed this in the, you know, the terrible events in Ukraine and right across the world. And we really felt it and seen it in our energy bills and our electricity bills and particularly in our fuel bills. But I suppose a beacon of good news in the last couple of weeks is that what we have seen, and maybe many of your listeners have probably seen it already, is a pretty strong reduction in petrol and diesel prices over the last 3 to 4 weeks. I live down here in West Cork, for example, and we're seeing prices about €1.78 here at the moment for petrol, a little bit higher for diesel. Now, that stepped back significantly from the record prices of about €2.20 that we were seeing maybe 6 to 8 weeks ago. Now, why are prices reducing? In many ways, it just reflects what's happening at a global level. There's an expectation, I suppose, that there is a big global recession coming, and people are using less oil and as a consequence less petrol and diesel. And I suppose when we've kind of run the numbers on it, I would expect petrol prices to drop below €1.70 hopefully by month's end, and maybe diesel prices a couple of cents higher. And again, that's a big kind of a step back from the record prices that we saw 6 to 8 weeks ago. So hopefully a bit of good news for us.
And Paul, would I be right? I'm trying to think back, you know, pre-invasion of Ukraine and probably pre-pandemic as well. Were they around 140, would say, in terms of petrol prices?
They were. You know, that seems so long ago now, doesn't it?
Yeah, I know, you're trying to scratch your head.
Back in February and January, they were around €1.40, €1.50 per litre. And I suppose in many ways, you know, even if we kind of took a time machine and travelled back to then, and we're talking now about €1.80, €1.70, and we're happy about that. So it really shows you the significant surge in prices that we've seen over the last couple of months. If we were talking about prices of €1.70 or even €1.80 back in January, we would have thought we were crazy. But But again, it's just a big climb down from where we were 6 to 8 weeks ago. And thankfully, look, coming into the winter months, it's good news for motorists, but it's also good news as well, actually, for people who heat their homes with oil, particularly with kerosene or fuel oil. So we've seen a big reduction. Now, prices are still very high. Look, we have to be honest here, but they're not as high as they were before. So coming into winter months, again, for home heating, with oil or with kerosene, there's a welcome reduction in prices there, but still high when you look at the long-term trends.
So if you were somebody with your expertise looking to, you know, you were obviously heating your house with oil and looking to fill up the oil tank, is now the best time to do so?
It's always good to give your local supplier a call now and just see what the prices are. What we're seeing typically before the kids go back to school, we tend to see a surge in people buying oil around the country, and that tends to drive prices up a little bit, particularly in the last week in August. I always just kind of ring my local supplier here every couple of weeks and just say what the price is now and kind of ask them what's their feel for it. I'm, you know, looking at where your tank is, but I would expect really that those prices to soften, certainly not get much higher as we come into September. Sometimes there's a benefit in waiting. You know, I suppose realistically, the heating season doesn't start in Ireland till October, sometimes November. There can be a benefit in waiting here, but I'd encourage listeners, you know, if they are interested, just pick up the phone, get onto your local supplier, ask around for different prices and get their kind of sense on it, you know. But from here on in, we would not expect oil prices certainly to return to where they were 6 to 8 weeks ago.
And Paul, just finally, when we're comparing prices, you know, when prices were at their highest around, you know, 220, I think it got up to around 224 here around Kildare. And I was asking a few different people about the prices reaching so high in this county, and they were noting it's due to our area, maybe due to the fact that Kildare has so many motorways. I believe the most motorways in the whole country go through County Kildare. I have to double check my facts there. Does that have an effect on certain areas having higher prices at all?
It does indeed, and often the prices will reflect the demand. You know, if you're a retailer and you're able to sell lots of petrol for €1.24, you're going to keep on doing that. What we see actually, interestingly, if you kind of drive around the country, you often see actually the smaller independent stations offering much lower prices. And this is kind of a break from tradition here. You know, it tends to be the larger branded retailers who tend to have the higher prices. I know in my own local area here that the smaller suppliers, the kind of the names that would be less familiar, maybe the kind of family-run businesses, tend to offer better value when it comes to petrol and diesel. So that's something that we're seeing as well. So it does help the shop around a little bit. Now, obviously, if you're in an area that doesn't have a lot of choice, you're kind of locked into that. But looking around at different prices, it does help in trying to get a good deal and things.
Well, Dr. Paul Dean, thank you for your time this morning and that advice. Research Fellow at the Maori Centre for Marine and Renewable Energy and the Environmental Research Institute at University College Cork.
All right. Thanks indeed for joining us there, Paul Dean, and to Kira for that as well. This is your final chance to get in touch with us if you want to be given a chance of coming on air and having a guess at our mystery sound. And this is the mystery sound one more time. If you think you know what it is, text your name and where you're from to 0833 97 97 97. Don't send your guess, though. Just your name and where you're from, and the computer will pick somebody at random and will give you a call before 11 o'clock. It is €650 up for grabs today. And if it's not won on Kildare today, of course, it goes to the 11 to 2 show with John Dunn and then K-Drive with Paul Power. And if it's not won today, it goes up to €675 tomorrow. So get your texts in. We'll be picking someone in the next 15 minutes.
Kildare Today.
With Whitewater Shopping Centre Newbridge, Ireland's largest regional shopping centre. Fashion, food, film, all under one roof in the heart of Newbridge. WhitewaterSC.ie.
Okay, you're very welcome back to the programme, and we have a real treat on the show now. We're going to hear some classical tenor music from the 60s in a moment's time from the gentleman that joins me on the line now. His name is Peter Coogan, originally from the UK, of Irish descent, moved over here to Kildare, up to Selbridge about 50 years ago. Peter Coogan, good morning and welcome to the programme.
Good morning, Owen, and thank you.
It's so good to talk to you. We were put in touch with you by your good friend Barry Enriquez, who is a good friend to us here at KFM as well. And we were sent your CD in the post, which we'll talk about in a few moments. But first of all, tell us a little bit about yourself. As I say, you were born in Manchester and then moved over here to Selbridge.
Yeah, actually, I was born in Manchester. My parents ran an Irish dance hall in Manchester My father, Pierce Coogan, had a mission in life, which was to make sure all the Irish people who came over got work, and the dance hall, thousands of Irish people met their husbands, wives there, and got jobs. And it was like most Irish dance halls in the UK at that time. They became a community centre for Irish people. And that's where I met my wife, Mary. She's from Clare. That happened 50 odd years ago. And I came to Dublin and I was studying singing. I'd hoped, got a faint hope to make a career out of my singing. I sang it at Burns Night. I had a number of Scottish songs in my repertoire. A scout, I think, from RTE, I think it was Television, as it then was, asked me to go for an audition for a new show. The show was called A Noble Call. It was a pub setting, very nicely set up pub in the studio in Donnybrook. And on the first night of that show, I sang at the request of the producer the Song of the Clyde. And I was very happy. This was my first step into the television world. And, of course, it was in black and white. Not many people can claim to have sung in black and white. But I was working in a company, Bowmaker, which is a finance company. And I got a call a couple of days later from the producer to say, we've got a sack of mail here from people who want to hear you again. So we're going to book you again for 2 weeks hence. And I was delighted. And then the following week, I was rummaging through music, and one of my colleagues came in with the Evening Herald, and the headline was, TV show axed over drinks bill. And it came out that the cost of the drink at this studio bar had shocked the administration of Television, and the show got immediately chopped. So I had a very short-lived career in A Noble Call. I don't know who drank all the drink. It certainly wasn't me. I went on then. They asked me to do another wonderful production for RTE, which was The Last Troubadour, the story of Percy French. That actually was, a lot of it was filmed in Kildare. I played the part of a ticket collector at Salins Station, and a lot of the filming was done along the canal at Salins, and that was... it was the biggest production Television had done at the time, and about well over an hour programme, and it was repeated, and I tried to get a copy of the tape, but all those tapes in those days were so expensive that they got wiped and reused, so that disappeared into the ether.
Yeah, it's a great story, Peter, how you came over to Ireland and started getting involved in those productions at RTE. Delighted to hear you did some filming in Salins as well, because that's my hometown. So, and I know that Percy French, particularly when he was travelling around Ireland, he tended to travel by train and spent a lot of time going through the train stations here in Kildare. Just before we speak a little bit about the recording of your CD and some of the other stuff that you did in the 60s, here in Ireland, over in Manchester, that move then from Manchester to Ireland, was that in tandem with the work that you were beginning to get on television?
No, I suppose it was coincidental that it was around the same time, but I was working for in finance in the UK, and I desperately wanted to come to Ireland. We lived in an Irish community. Most of the people I knew were Irish. I had been spending summers since early childhood in Ireland, and I just felt Ireland was where I wanted to be. In fact, I done very well in the job I was in the UK, and on a Friday evening I left my job and came to Dublin, having been in correspondence with the Bowmaker for over a year. And I took a drop in salary to about one-third so that I could be in Ireland. And I never looked back. I was very happy to be here. And I've been here very happily since. But my job, fortunately, because I did have to make the choice between occasional bookings for singing, which were not going to pay the mortgage, or to stay with the job, which had a monthly salary. And so my singing was reduced to the occasional concert, which I was always happy to do, but they were few and far between anyway. And so I continued taking singing lessons, and I stayed in the job, and I spent 24 years with Bowmaker and spent the last 9 years as managing director.
Okay, and Peter, how did the move to Selbridge come about then? How did you land in the north of Kildare?
Well, I had to go to see a client in Kildare town, and I had an interest in horses. Before I left the UK, I owned a couple of jumpers, and I really wanted a place where I could keep horses. So I took a detour. I came to Selbridge, having got the map to find out where it was. And I remember driving into Selbridge and this very impressive picture of a snake of young girls wearing straw hats and gym slips led by a school teacher. They were from the collegiate school in Selbridge, a very orderly, very impressive row of young girls. And I found this place that I'd seen advertised, 4 acres on the Ardclough Road. I thought this was heaven. This was absolute heaven. And so I went about buying it and built a house there. And that's where I lived for nearly 40 years. And I'm still on the Ardclough Road, but moved to a smaller house because as I got older, I couldn't do all the maintenance and that I used to do.
Take me then to 1965, Peter, where you go to Silver Pine Studios in Bray in County Wicklow and you record a CD, Favourite Songs by Peter Coogan, the tenor, a 7-track CD which was sent in to us. And I have to say, it's a beautiful, beautiful compilation. Where did this idea come from?
Well, I was at that time, I was keeping up my singing lessons with a wonderful lady, Molly Phillips, who was a very popular singing teacher and accompanist. And she worked in RTE, and she suggested to me that you should make a recording. And one of my colleagues knew a man called Mr. Stapleton, who owned Silver Pine. So I rang him and he said, come on out. And so I went out with Molly Phillips and we made all of those. We made the entire thing in one afternoon. She was a bit surprised. She said, this should have taken us a week, but I couldn't afford the studio for a week. So we had to do it all in one afternoon. And it worked out reasonably well, but Molly Phillips was used to artists of greater standing than mine who would go and spend, you know, several days correcting and adjusting their pieces. But I really couldn't afford to do that, so it all had to be dashed out in one go. And that's what you have.
There was a story then, Peter, was there not, that this CD kind of got lost in the ether then after?
Oh yes, I'd forgotten all about it. I mean, life became very busy, and only about a couple of months ago, in clearing out an old chest in the attic, I found this tape with the label Silver Pine Studios on it. And then I remembered that, yes, I made a studio tape, and I took it to a laboratory because I was afraid it, with age it would have disintegrated. And they were able to get the music off it and put it on CDs for me, which was a great joy, really, because I had I've been singing here and there at concerts along the way, but I'd forgotten all about this, the recording. And so there it was, revived. So I was very happy to get it.
Definitely. And some of the songs that are on it, Westering Home, Star of the County Down, Wee Huey, Marie's Wedding, She Moved Through the Fair, and also the two songs that we're going to play on the programme this morning, I'll Walk Beside You and Song of the Clyde. What about those songs, Peter, really did you like about them that, I suppose, warranted getting put on this record?
Well, the Song of the Clyde is the one that I sang in my debut performance on A Noble Call for Television Aaron, and that was the selection of the producer because one of his colleagues had heard me sing it at a Scottish concert for Burns Night. And so that became a kind of deeply embedded in my brain because it was the only one I sang in that programme. I Walk Beside You was probably the song I was most requested to sing. And in fact, I'm getting on in years now, but I had the privilege of singing at the birthday party of a 95-year-old lady a couple of years ago, and she asked me to sing I'll Walk Beside You. So it was very special to be asked at my age to sing it. I sing to amuse myself and in the shower, and I don't have too many people queuing up outside. but the voice is actually not too bad, bearing in mind the fact that I'm now 85.
It's super.
It still works.
It absolutely does, and we're going to play those two songs from that recording in 1965 at Silver Pine Studios, I'll Walk Beside You and Song of the Clyde. Before we let you go, Peter Coogan, I just want to mention that the name Coogan obviously stands out, and we were told reliably that you're the uncle of English comedian Steve Coogan, well known as Alan Partridge.
That is absolutely true. In fact, Steve and I spent a couple of days last week in West Cork with my sister's house. Steve comes over here, loves to come to Ireland, and he spent a couple of days with us here in Selbridge, and then we went off to West Cork. Great company. He and I remember when he was a toddler, he used to come and stay with us in Selbridge. And, Ireland is home for all of us. He's a great collector of cars. We drove to Cork in a 38-year-old Mercedes, which has a very interesting story, and it's like brand new. He's a car nut, but a great company, great company.
And he's doing so well for himself as well. Just sold out the Three Arena in Dublin for two nights also. So it's great to know that he has the connections to Selbridge, Steve Coogan, or Alan Partridge as well.
Yeah, well, we're deeply dug into Kildare because my daughter Sinead and her husband Stephen and my twin grandsons are in Clane and very happily settled there. So we're really rooted in Kildare nowadays.
Super stuff. Well, listen, it's been a pleasure talking to you on the programme this morning, Peter. As I say, we're going to play two of the songs from this album. I think people are going to love it because your voice is just fantastic. And I love the kind of older sound to it. You can tell it was recorded on a tape, although it has been put now into CD form. It still is a little trip down memory lane, and I'm sure it will be for many people as well. Recorded in 1965. Peter Coogan, thanks indeed for joining us on the programme, and good morning to you.
Owen. Good morning and thank you so much. Thank you. Bye-bye for now.
I'll walk beside you through the world today, while dreams and songs and flowers bless your way. I'll look into your eyes and hold your hand. I'll walk beside you the golden land. I'll walk beside you through the world tonight, beneath the starry skies ablaze with light, and in your heart love's tender words I'll hide. I'll walk beside you through the eventide. I'll walk beside you through the passing years, through days of cloud and sunshine, joy and tears. And when the great call comes, the sunset gleams, I'll walk beside you to the land. I'm happy beside. The song that I sing is the song o' the Clyde. Of all Scottish rivers, it's dearest to me. It flows from Lead Hills all the way to the sea. It borders the orchards of Lanarkshire Fair, meanders through meadows with sheep grazing there. From Glasgow to Greenock, in towns on each side, the hammer's ding-dong is the song o' the Clyde. O' the River Clyde, the wonderful Clyde, the name of it thrills me and fills me with pride, and I'm satisfied whate'er may betide. The sweetest of songs is the song o' the Clyde. Imagine we've left Craig and Doran behind, and wind happy odds by Kilcreggan we find. At Kern and Dunoon and in Ellen we stay. Then Scotland's Madeira, that's Rothsay they say. Maybe by Fairlie or Largs we will go, or over to Millport that thrills people so. Maybe journey to Arran, it can't be denied. Those scenes all belong to the song o' the Clyde. Oh, the River Clyde, the wonderful Clyde, the name of it thrills me and fills me with pride, and I'm satisfied whate'er may betide. The sweetest of songs is the song o' the Clyde. There's Maud Padoon at the Broomilla that go and doon the water for the fair. There's Bob and Mary on the Govan ferry wishing Jet Propulsion could be there. There's steamers cruising and there's baddies snoozing and there's laddies fishing for the pier. And past perspiring very near expiring as he rows a boat tree there to hear. With eyes a-flashing it is voted smashing to be walking daily on the prom. And May and Evelyn are in seventh heaven as they stroll along with Dick and Tom. And Dumbarton Rock to every Jean and Jock extends a welcome that is high and wide. Seems to know that they are on their homeward way to hear the song o' the Clyde. O' the River Clyde, the wonderful Clyde, the name of it thrills me and fills me with pride, and I'm satisfied whate'er may betide. The sweetest of songs is the song of the Clyde.
Yes, the beautiful voice of Peter Coogan. He's a tenor living in Selbridge, and they are two songs that are recorded on a CD at Silver Pine Studios in Bray back in 1965. And it does kind of take you on a trip down memory lane. And I'm sure a lot of people will remember listening to music like that on the wireless in the 60s and 70s. Obviously, I don't, but I've heard stories of it. Peter Coogan, great to talk to him on the programme this morning. The uncle of Steve Coogan, a.k.a. Alan Partridge, and Peter living in Selbridge.